Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Radio Free Readout. You have just tuned in to the John Jacob Schmidt Show. Happy Father's Day weekend ahead of time. I thank all you fathers out there. We'd like to say Happy Father's Day to my own father. I know a lot of you have big plans. A lot of you are doing some great things with your kids or with your dads. So thank you for them. Thank the Lord for them. Or thank you and thank the Lord to those mentors who have stepped up in the place of sometimes an absence of a dad. And ultimately, we want to thank our Heavenly Father for His love, His mercy, His grace, and that we belong to Him and we're very grateful. And we thank you for His hand of protection and providence. Why can I not talk? I feel a little tongue-tied today, and I had a heavy heart when I woke up this morning and I went to my email. And I started to see the news coming in about something that I'm going to talk about that just crushed my heart here in the heart of the American Redoubt. I saw the news headlines with the state capital of the state of Idaho, the symbol, the bulwark of conservative American traditional heritage, right in the heart of the American Redoubt, in the heart of Patriot territory. There are the pictures of the state capital in rainbow colors. Now, this is no accident. This is strategic. And a lot of people are saying, what? How could this have happened? What? Explanations are in order. Well, we have explanations for you. Some of you might not want to hear it, but sometimes we don't want to hear truth. And that's what you're going to get right here at Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American Redoubt. I also want to thank ACN for and congratulate them for their expansion now, who can be heard on 96.5 FM in Spokane, Spokane Valley, the greater Spokane area, and Kootenai County, Coeur d'Alene. All of you guys, thanks for tuning in and for listening wherever you are. Also want to thank our live streaming audience for tuning in, and we're not going to forget about the rest of you in the ACN network. Thank you guys so much for your continued prayers and support of Radio Free Readout. Your words of encouragement, your wisdom, your input, I cherish it. My email is johnjacob@radiofreereadout.com. Always love hearing from you. I'm pretty much caught up on most of my emails, but there are still a couple that I got to follow through with. You have not been forgotten. Now, let's get right into the news and commentary. And I have more news than I could possibly ever even sift through, but this is such a pivotal moment. The news is next here at Radio Free Readout and is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the social and economic collapse in America and the rebuilding. It's a great story, all 10 books out, including audio. Go to 299days.com to learn more. Let's talk about this one single because this is so profound. This is so symbolic that this is worthy of our attention. We have a great guest we're going to be bringing on. I'm really looking forward to here in the second segment. Ways that you can get involved. But this story here, from KBOI2.com. The day before Pride Fest, Boise goes into full swing, the Idaho Capitol building lit up in rainbow colors Friday night. After some financial battles, well, I have the backstory behind that. No word yet on how they made everything come together, or rather who picked up the bill, so we were surprised to see the bright colors shine through. Groups of Boise residents gathered on the statehouse lawn to take photos, Snapchats, and celebrate Pride Fest. Now, who could have been funding this? Well, let's look further. Other buildings around downtown Boise also joined the celebrations. And among those, prominently displayed in rainbow colors is Zion Bank. Zion Bank. They have been pushing this multi-ethnic, multi-faith platform. They've been behind a lot of this, and we've talked about this in the past. Now, this is supposedly a predominantly Mormon-owned bank. So it's surprising to see this, a financial institution designed to help support the Mormon church. And that bank is pushing a multicultural, multi-faith agenda. They were instrumental in the Islamification efforts for Southern Idaho. Idaho being the beacon, one of a few beacons in the United States left for conservative Christian values, the reason why people are moving to the American Redoubt in Idaho, the state of Idaho is right at the center of it, which makes them the victims of the biggest bullseye that they have painted on them. For the efforts of the left on all fronts, they have to attack it. And then, of course, the ripple effect goes out from there to the rest of the states, Montana, Wyoming, Eastern Oregon and Eastern Washington. Now, here in Eastern Washington, we are largely conservative, but those on the other side of the state have a stranglehold on the legislature. And the effects have been felt by this leftist agenda for quite some time in Eastern Washington. But Idaho's been holding out, and they still continue to. But this was not under an aggressive homosexual advocating Obama administration at the nation's capital, where it is out of reach and out of your control. This was under the watch of a Republican governor, Butch Otter, who claims to stand for Idaho values. And so far, and I've been looking, he's been completely silent on this. I'm sure he's going to have to weigh in at some point as people demand answers. I sent an email out to those who are on my email list for Idaho, including numerous legislators and numerous pastors that I correspond with and have on my list and work with many of them on a lot of these issues. And of course, a lot of Ameron operators and redoubters, people that are members. And someone writes back, "This is awful. We moved here because we thought Idaho had values. Guide us in what we can do, John Jacob." Well, first of all, know this. You can take comfort in this. Idaho does have values. The people in Idaho are principled, conservative, right-wing, mostly Christian people. This was a small handful of people with an agenda who were behind lighting up. And this is what happened, because I looked into this and I've been speaking with legislators this morning, asking them, how in the heck? Sometimes it's hard to be a Christian. That's the conundrum, right? Sometimes I want to react in such an unchristian way, but if I wasn't a Christian, these things wouldn't bother me. So what a situation to be in, right? Here's the bottom line here. First of all, what you can do. Actually, let me put that on hold. Let me tell you how this happened in just a few minutes that we have, because time is going so fast. There are no rules. Now, the government in Idaho and all states are ran by rules, okay? These rules have the full force of law. This is the breaks down legislation. Like, for example, one example that was given, state legislators might agree we need a law requiring chiropractors to get licensed, all right? Because we can see where some people have been hurt. We want to make sure people are trained. Okay, so yes, here's this law. Boom, you must be licensed. Now what they do is they turn this over to a chiropractor, a professional committee who can develop this curriculum or these requirements for people to get licensed. And then they pass that rule. And the legislature, most of the time, do not even look at the rules. They just say, okay, good, you got something down. You're the professionals. We trust you. So stamp of approval. Bam. The problem is these rules are being written around the clock, year round. And part of these rules for operations on state grounds and the Capitol grounds, the rules say you cannot disallow anyone from lighting up the Capitol for any reason. We're going to talk more about this when we come back, and we're going to do a special segment on this next, probably in the next couple of weeks. We'll be back in just a minute. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt.
My name is Bruce DeLay, and this is your Patriot Moment. Both the U.S. Supreme Court and our Oklahoma State Supreme Court have recently handed down ungodly and unconstitutional decisions regarding marriage and the Ten Commandments, respectively. Our judges have forgotten that we are one nation under God. They have violated the consent of the governed. They have forgotten that we Christians are constrained to obey God, not men, in times like these. Yet the voice of the Lord can be heard asking this question, and it is a clarion call. Psalm 94:16, the Lord asks, "Who will stand up for me against the evildoer?" I will. Will you? My name is Bruce DeLay, and this is your Patriot Moment. Visit ProtectLifeOK.com today.
Number 7. Strive constantly for spiritual growth. We as individuals can push the world along toward mankind's highest destiny if each of us will make the welfare of his fellow man his first concern, and if each of us will apply the principles of God's truth to our political and economic affairs. And lastly, obligation number 8. Dedicate a part of your everyday life to the bringing of these requirements of American citizenship to the attention of fellow students, fellow workers, neighbors, and friends.
This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Thank you so much for tuning in. What you heard there during that break is a new set, a series of Patriot Moments that we are going to be bringing to you each week, and those are produced by Pastor Bruce DeLay, a very rare commodity in our country, apparently, and that is the Patriot Pastor. He produces those Patriot Moments, and the Truth in the Heartland Church. I'm sorry. Church in the Heartland, and that is out of Oklahoma. Great guy, an Amron core operator, recommended these audio files. He says these are wonderful and they're inspirational, and he does these and they're short. Check him out. I liked him so much. I want to share them with you guys. We're going to do that each week with the new one. Also, Violet Sabo will be producing some new Points to Ponder, Words to Live By, and Ideals Which Define Us. So we've got more of those to look forward to in the coming weeks. Now, before we bring on our guests, I just want to wrap this up real quick. What can you do about this situation? in Idaho where anybody can light up the Capitol for any reason. There are no restrictions. They didn't have the light colors that they wanted to make the rainbow lights. They said, sorry, can't help you. But if you get the lights yourselves, which I guess are super expensive, then have at it. So they did. They rounded up the money from some mysterious source. No idea who that could have been. I mean, the Zion Bank comes to mind at the top of the list of suspects, as far as I'm concerned. But we'll look into that further, because right now that's just conjecture. I admit it. But I am suspicious. But what you can do about it is change the rules. Put pressure on the legislature to pass legislation restricting the rules so that the capital of Idaho cannot be defaced by anything promoting sexual deviancy or anything illegal. And by the way, it is still constitutionally illegal for two people of the same sex to be married in Idaho. That constitutional amendment still stands. That's just being ignored. Also, sodomy is illegal. It's a felony in the state of Idaho, and that has not changed. You cannot promote something that's illegal or sexual deviancy. How's that? Let's get that bill drafted. We're already working with some legislators, and they're saying, love it. Let's do it. So we're going to follow that through. Why? Because Idaho is different. Now, Idaho is just one part of the American Redoubt. There's another part, very significant. Eastern Washington. Washington State is in the battle for liberty on all fronts. Specifically, right now we're going to be talking about land use, private land ownership, stewardship of the lands. So we have a guest that is a great, great patriot. He's a third-generation native of Washington State, a retired Navy veteran who served his country with honor for 25 years. He's been involved in local and state government issues, fighting for things that we value as patriots. Land ownership is at the top of the list, and the founding fathers even said so. You must have sovereign control and full use and enjoyment of your land unimpeded as long as it's not affecting other people adversely. That's what they said. But we're not fighting for that today. It's fighting the opposite. It is the statists who are trying to wrestle control from the citizens and the people, the public, even the public lands, to control it and restrict the use of it. And they're not doing a very good job of managing it. So we have a candidate who for the commissioner of public lands in Washington, and it's an honor to bring on, you've heard him before, a guest on Radio Free Readout before, Steve McLaughlin. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Good morning, John Jacob, and good morning, Readout listeners. How are you today?
We are doing well. We're grieving a little bit because of this, what's happened over there in the state of Idaho with that, rainbow colors thing, but let's divert ourselves from that because there are other issues that are worthy of our attention. At the top of that list is land use and private land ownership issues, which we're in a fight for. So you're the only one that's qualified that I know of for that position. I also know your heart, but if you could just tell the audience a little bit about yourself, what background and experience you have that you think is going to set you apart from the other candidates seeking this position for the Commissioner of Public Lands in Washington.
Well, the first thing is I'm a 25-year Navy veteran, served essentially my entire career in leadership positions. And as Public Lands Commissioner, I will be the more or less chief executive officer of a very diverse group of departments within the Department of Natural Resources in Washington. I know how to lead, and I know how to organize and get the best out of my people. And the department needs good leadership. They need solid leadership. And they need to be empowered to do their job because they want to do their job and they've been stifled. The other thing that qualifies me in this is in my last job in the Navy, I was the executive officer of a naval station in the Puget Sound, and we had a 5,000-acre facility where we managed a working forest, we allowed for recreation, and in fact, we set 10% of that aside as an old-growth forest reserve. And so we practiced the theory of multiple use there, which is what we need to work from so that we can generate jobs, forest jobs, and other jobs in that type of an economy, and create, once again, healthy forests and rangelands that have been choked up over the failed practices of the last 25 or 30 years.
Well, I can tell you, and you know, we're going to spend the next almost 40 minutes talking about this, because this, we've got two different issues. Now, I do want to talk about private land ownership and the use of, there's another component here, and that's the state lands, or just public lands, I should say, that are, they're lacking in proper maintenance. And then we also have the relationship between the federal level, such as BLM, Forest Service, and even the EPA, and how that is going to mesh together with the administration that you'd be running under that public lands office. And last summer, during the wildfires in Washington State, as you know, I was with a number of other Ameron operators who provided emergency disaster communications to one of several towns that had been evacuated. We got to spend a lot of time talking to the firefighters, and both state as well as the local county level fire protection services. They expressed a lot of concern, or frustration, about how poorly managed the forest is, first of all, that they allowed a tinderbox to develop over the several years. And secondly, the access to it to be able to fight those fires. So let's talk about that, because that is, let's boil it down. Our biggest threat in Washington State is probably, besides the potential for a major earthquake on the coast, inland, it's fire, it's wildfires. So what would you do differently about the way it's been handled?
Say that again, John.
Oh, sorry. For some reason, this system, when one talks, it cuts the other one off. So I apologize for that if we doubled up. But I was going to ask, what do you plan to do differently to better manage these forests to prevent the massive scale of wildfire like we experienced last summer?
Okay, before I answer the question, I'm just going to tell you that I'm on the road right now, and I'm going to be coming up on a cell hole. And if I drop, I will call right back in. But my plan is a three-phase plan. The first one focuses on prevention. And the way to prevent these catastrophic wildfires from occurring in the first place is to go in and map and figure out where the high-density fuels are and get those out of the forest. And the way you do that is, in the off-season, is to, do slash burning. And I had a really good question asked me, or posed to me the other day, is how do you want your smoke? Do you want your smoke in little tidbits of a few hours a day, or do you want to breathe this all summer long with all this CO2 being put up into the atmosphere? So fuels removal, and then creating healthy forests through pre-commercial thinning, commercial thinning, and restoring a balance based on that is the preventive side of things. Healthy working forests. The second element of firefighting is initial attack. And with initial attack, we have to be able to train local firefighters to be able to initially attack. And I want to initiate a training program for landowners that will train them how to effectively attack a fire and do it safely and know when to stop fighting the fire to turn over to other fire jurisdictions. Sometimes, you know, one or two people can only do so much, and you have to know when to retreat.
Good point.
The third element to initial attack is to work with the legislature for funding to allow for early aerial attack with helicopters and fixed-wing assets to get retardant on the fires to put them out before they get going. You know, let's burn the forest with controlled burns, especially on the east side. You know, fire is part of the ecosystem. And it's necessary to help with the germination of certain tree species, mainly the ponderosa pine. Finally, on the response side, it is the duty of an incident manager to get ahead of the incident as soon as possible. And one of the things that I've been seeing over the past few years is fighting fires based on jurisdictional boundaries.
Oh, yes.
Fire knows no boundary, and neither should the firefighters, okay? So the Forest Service, the BLM, DNR, the BIA, we all need to work together, include local jurisdictions to deal with this menace and you know, stop fighting on boundaries where fire, you know, ignores.
Absolutely. I do recall last year, as we followed that very closely, the state of Montana had a serious issue. It turned out, I'm surprised it didn't turn into fist fights, but the governor was asking for air assets to fight fires, and the federal government was making them stand down. A lot of this was due to funding arguments and allocating the air assets to attack the fire that they didn't want to commit because somebody didn't want to pay for it, and who's going to be charged for this, and then the fires continued to rage on out of control, and a lot of the interagency, the bickering that took place, a lot of times over funding, it was preposterous, it was ludicrous.
Yeah, and you know what we need to do is we need to protect the people to pay the bill. That pay the bill. And, you know, it is we, the people, who pay those bills. And last year, you know, $200 million was spent on firefighting efforts. Now, where do you want that money to go? Do you want to have it going up in smoke for firefighting? Or would you rather, at the end of the year, divert those funds back towards our schools and education and continuing to promote healthy working forests? And,
sure.
Oh, by the way, clean water.
Well, that's another issue as well. And we do have some other things we're going to talk about on the other side of the break. We're going to go to a break here in just a couple seconds. But the farmers and the ranchers, they're taking a beating as well. And so we want to talk about that. And these wildfires, we're not done with this issue. We'll continue the conversation right after this. We're with Steve McLaughlin here at Radio Free Readout.
There is an exodus happening in America today, from cities full of crime and corruption to the rural areas of clean and sustainable living. Like-minded patriots are coming to North Idaho in search of a simpler, self-reliant lifestyle. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's great readout, North Idaho. Sometimes God puts you somewhere for a special reason. For me, I believe it's to help like-minded patriots find safety and security for their loved ones. At Revolutionary Realty, we educate buyers about solar power, growing food, obtaining water, and personal security. I became a realtor in 2008 at the bottom of the real estate market, but not the top. I believe that there is a grand plan and that I'm just a part of it. My job is to help people discover and relocate to America's great redoubt. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us at revrealty.us to learn more. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
Do you ever wonder how we got to this point in America when we can hardly recognize it anymore? I'll tell you how. We've handed the children over to a communist agenda. And shame on you, the generation before mine and the one before that, for your apathy. Don't believe it's an agenda? Vladimir Lenin, the patriarch of Soviet communism, said, "Give me 4 years to teach the children, and the seed I have sown will never be uprooted." Well, we're seeing the fruit that those seeds have turned into. We're watching the communist agenda unfold in our society and in our public schools and in our institutions of higher indoctrination. Someone a little smarter introduced this concept first, however. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's from Proverbs 22, verse 6. What seeds are you allowing to be planted? Are they godly seeds, or the atheistic, poisonous seeds Lenin spoke of? Bob Holliday said it best by posing this rhetorical question. What Jewish family in the Bible would have sent their kids off to Rome to be educated? Well, that's exactly what some of you are doing. Just think it over. There are alternatives, you know. I'm Violette Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
The voice of the American Redoubt. Radio. Free. Redoubt.
This is segment three here at Radio Free Redoubt. Thank you guys for sticking around and for tuning in, and thank you for your support. We'd also like to thank our sponsors for supporting us, and segment three is brought to you by Riverfront Suites. Go to riverfrontsuites.com if you need a place just to get away for the weekend, or if you're in the American Redoubt job hunting and looking for land, go to riverfrontsuites.com. Beautiful setting right on the St. Joe River outside of St. Mary's, Idaho, and pretty centrally located for wherever you might want to be roaming around and looking for land, looking for work. It's great. Check it out, riverfrontsuites.com. And my email address is johnjacob@radiofreeredoubt.com. Before we get back to Steve McLaughlin, he is the candidate for Commissioner of Public Lands in Washington State coming up. There's a couple of events I want to remind you of. You might get a chance. We'll ask him to be able to meet Steve. God and Country Celebration is coming up next weekend, June 24th through the 26th. It is a great family event. The gates are going to open Friday at noon, and the first event takes place at 7 p.m. that night. You won't want to miss it. Great weekend. And also, no paintball challenge this weekend. So what they're going to do is a youth challenge. This is incredible. This is going to be a round robin essentials skills challenge, where they're going to go from station to station using land navigation, the map and compass. They're going to learn communications, building a old foxhole radio, and operating two-way radios. Are going to learn first aid, such as applying a battle dressing, and building an improvised litter to carry one of their teammates. They're going to be broken down into three-man teams. And then firearms. So start practicing now. Field stripping and reassembling an AR-15. And they're going to learn sight alignment, and they'll be engaging five steel reactionary targets. All this at the Youth Challenge next weekend at the God and Country Celebration. So start practicing. Get your AR-15 out with your kid. Adult supervision, of course, always. And start practicing field stripping and reassembling that AR-15. And join us next weekend. Lots of stuff going on that weekend. Now, back to our guest. Retired, 25 years of service in the Navy, serving our country, developing leadership skills and problem-solving skills, which we're going to talk more about. But the candidate for Commissioner of Public Lands, Steve McLaughlin, is deserving of your vote. He is a God-fearing patriot, and he has an eye for problem-solving. And we do have problems in Washington's forests. And he's got an action plan, though. He's not just pointing out problems. He's also providing solutions, and they are sensible solutions that are a clear demonstration of a willingness to be a good steward of what God's given us. Steve, thank you for being with us at Radio Free Redoubt.
Thank you, John. And before we get moving along here, I'd like to give you my website, which is www.mac4lands.org. Mac4lands.org. And get on there and take a look at some of the things we've got going on there. We continue to add to the site all the time. And, you know, we started this campaign very late, and regrettably, part of the campaign effort is to raise money. And on that website, on the right-hand side of the homepage, there is a donate button. And, folks, we could sure use your help. We're behind the power curve here, and we need to raise a lot of money. So anything you can do to help me out and help out our effort, that's our effort, yours and mine, to get a good patriot into office, we need your help. So thank you for that. www.mac4lands, mac4lands.org. Thanks. Sorry, I had to put a little cut in for myself there, John.
No, I'm glad you did, because that's after the introduction, I was going to ask you to get that information out there. And in fact, I already had your website pulled up. It looks great. There's no question about who you are and what your intentions are. And obviously the credentials to back up, you know, your claims to be capable of doing this are unquestionable. And of course, I also know you on a different level. I've worked with you on different issues that concern us as patriots. I know where your head and your heart is at. And I was excited to hear that you were actually going to be running for this position. I couldn't think of a better person for it. So I'm glad. And just as a reminder, in case you guys didn't get that, that is Mac4lands.org, Mac4lands.org. And we'll also have that linked at Radio Free Redoubt. It's also on our Facebook page. We just shared that, and you can click right on through. And also, you'll be able to look in our highlights and resources posting, where we post links to all the stuff that we talk about during the show, so you can go learn more about it yourself. So we were talking before, and before we get off of here, I'll have you put that out again. Please remind me. I probably won't need reminding on that, but just in case. Now, there's also something that you talked about that I'm not familiar with, and that's the public lands trust revenues. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Okay, per the enabling elements of the U.S. Constitution and the Equal Footing Doctrine, one of the things that when Washington became a state, two 640-acre sections of every township were set aside for in a public lands trust. Additionally, there are forest board trust lands in the state, and this is about 2 million acres of forest lands, tide lands, agricultural lands, etc. And the money that is generated from these trust lands goes to schools and other public institutions of education, schools and universities. And the Forest Board Trust lands also go to schools, but also to meet county needs. And one of the problems that we've seen here since the 1990s is a decrease in revenues from timber harvests and other harvests to these trusts, and it is a constitutional obligation of the Forest Practices Board that I will chair, and the Natural Resources Committee, and, you know, especially with the Schools Trust, to ensure that the trust is protected and it's done in a its funds are distributed in a balanced manner, and that, you know, we are guardians of that trust and we are protecting that public trust to ensure that the people of Washington State get what they need in both the schools and higher education and at the county level.
Okay, now, how are funds generated, or how is revenue, I should say, generated from public lands?
Well, in the forest, of course, it's forest products, so it's timber harvest. But we also have multiple tide lands where a portion of shellfish harvest are provided to the trust. Marinas that generate income, part of the profits from those marinas go to the public trust. And other, you know, DNR trust lands on agricultural and range lands from permit fees also go to the trust.
Okay, now we're just specifically talking about Washington State public lands here. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Now,
other states do have similar positions, but I'm not so sure that they, you know, it's under the same office as what we have in Washington.
Yeah, I know every state has a similar, you know, type of office, and they're all set up on a very similar construct, I guess. What is the relationship with your office when you become commissioner with the federal government, and how do you interoperate with them? Do you share any of the same jurisdiction?
No, we don't. But, you know, we do share a common effort to protect the people of Washington State from catastrophic fires, to save lives, protect property, to protect our wildlife, to protect our livestock and both, you know, cattle and sheep. And, you know, what I've seen is that, especially with the federal land managers, and that all they are is land managers, they are not property owners. I see an adversarial relationship developing between federal land managers and the people. And I will work with forest supervisors from the Forest Service and BLM to try to reduce that adversarial relationship. And I will also, on day one of my term in office, is I will ensure that, you know, the employees of DNR do the same and start to reestablish goodwill between the people who employ us and the Department of Natural Resources, as well as working closely with other federal managers to ensure that this conflict is resolved in a more peaceful manner.
Now, do you have, or I should say, what is your plan to work with the federal agencies that are mismanaging the forest? Their policies are contributing to the high fuels effects of, you know, these forest fires. It really comes down to mismanagement. So you can do your part on state lands, but how can you, I don't know if the word, pressure them to bring their forest management to the same standards as what you're going to be trying to do in state lands, because they neighbor each other? You might do everything right on your side, but there, because of their mismanagement, we're still affected by it. Washington public lands are affected by the mismanagement of the federal land management, I guess is what I'm saying. So what is your plan for trying to work with them to put pressure on them to bring their standards up?
Well, first off, Washington State and Oregon and Northern California is what we call the wood basket of the world. Wood grows faster and more dense and of higher quality than any other place on the planet. And if the Forest Service and BLM allow their forests to get choked up like some of the, you know, other forest lands in the state, that tends to lend towards catastrophic fires. And what I'd like to do is work early in my term meet with the Secretary of Interior and the Secretary of Agriculture at the federal level to come up with ways to where we can restore, first, public trust in our land management capabilities, but also to look at forest practices to restore healthy forests on all lands in Washington. And remember something. You know, human beings have been engaging in forest practices since before Roman times. Our Native Americans burnt the forest because they realized the need to have healthy forests in our own country, because wildlife flourishes in a healthy working forest. And the Native Americans worked the forest long before we were here. And this notion of returning federal forests back to pre-European states is, to me, ludicrous, because, you know, it would mean that we'd eliminate trails and recreation opportunities. And, you know, when Lewis and Clark came across this great country, you know, from 1802 to 1806, they followed trails and roads established by Native Americans.
Sure. Yeah, these are... these are really good points that you're making, and they want to take it back to a point even before that. And of course, a lot of this is driven from Agenda 21, now Agenda 2030. Have you incorporated kind of an attack strategy, I guess, for fending that off as it relates to the public lands office in Washington State?
Well, let's just put it very simply. My plan is to restore balance on our public lands that are way out of balance, and an unintended consequence of what the more radical elements in our society have attempted over the past 30 years to meet that, you know, Agenda 2030. And it's not working. It's failing. And in Europe, there's a reset on this as well. The whole notion of Agenda 21 in my mind is ludicrous. And, you know, let's get in there and work. And if nothing else, voting for me will stop the progress that, you know, the environmentalists are trying to make to shut us out entirely. And we can't have that.
Right. Yeah, that is absolutely unacceptable. And it's going to take people like you standing in the gap there. And now the Department of Lands in Washington, this is part of the executive branch. Is that correct?
Effectively, yes. It is... It is kind of in line with the lieutenant governor, the insurance commissioner, commissioner of public lands, attorney general's office. So it is an executive position. And its constitutional mandate is to protect the public trust. And I want to circle back for just a minute. You know, if we're returning our lands to prehistoric times, we know that, you know, when man came on the scene, prehistorically, you know, we started managing the forest, and, you know, it's ludicrous to go back to those times.
Oh, of course it is. And there was mismanagement. We understand that. There was clear cutting and just wholesale wiping out of forest, you know. But you know what? That was a bleak time. It was a time window that is past. You know, and they're trying to keep the pendulum swung all the way back over the other way, where they want no human activity on this. And that's their idea of maintaining and preserving it is, as you said, ludicrous, because there's no way for you to manage that trust if it's completely hands off and not being maintained, not generating revenue, which is a mandate by the Constitution, as you pointed out. And so, you know, as we understand, it's not going to be any small battle that you have ahead of you. What do you anticipate as the biggest challenge or obstacle for you being able to carry out this plan, and how can the people help you overcome that?
Probably going to be lawsuits. The requirements that I have to follow are clearly stated. And, you know, I will follow those. And then what we will do is, you know, in following the rule of law, we will work with the legislature to change or influence those regulations that are too restrictive. But at the same time, we must understand that, you know, first off, we need to have clean water. You know, we don't survive long without clean water. Number two,
no.
We need to have healthy forests. Number three, we need to protect and guard the public trust. And so in working to remove restrictions from meeting those, three elements is what I intend to try to influence with the legislature.
Excellent. And I know you have a good working relationship with several of the legislators, many who have also been in this fight for, proper land management. And you've got some good legislators willing to support you in that effort. And we didn't even really get a chance to talk about, and we're coming to nearing the end of our time, the water issue. How much of the waters fall within your jurisdiction versus the federal government? And what are your biggest, issues or things that you intend to address from a commissioner's perspective?
Well, first off, we have a forest and fish law that I will adhere to. It's a good law that mandates the establishment of habitat conservation plans to protect areas around our sources of water to, you know, ensure that we get the highest quality of water. It also, we'll take a look at how roads are built in forests to extract forest products to kind of divert them away from waterways that we need to protect for us and aquatic species. And so we'll work that and continue to work that in conjunction with our timber companies and private landowners to, you know, ensure the highest of water quality, and then, you know, take a look at what we can do to enhance recreation opportunities and while at the same time protecting endangered species and being able to get in and reap the benefits of the fruits of our forests and rangeland.
Absolutely. Amen to that. Wow, we've got a leader here with a vision for being a good steward of this land, and I'm very grateful for you taking the time to be with us to explain that. And I'm excited. One more time, if you could get your website out for the listeners, and we'll also link that, but shoot that out to them in any way that they can help you.
Okay, so my website is www.mac4lands.org. My Facebook is Steve McLaughlin for Commissioner of Public Lands. I've started this, campaign late, and I need your help. I will be at Marble next weekend, and everybody out there that's going to Marble, if you can bring a contribution to this campaign, it would be so greatly appreciated. And,
Absolutely.
Thank you all for listening to me today, and I look forward to working with you over the next term in office.
I do too. Thank you, sir. All right. Well, we look very much forward to seeing you next weekend. We'll talk to you, maybe get a word from you off to the side for next week's show as well. So God bless you and Godspeed to you and all that you set your hand to in this campaign. Thank you, sir, and God bless.
God bless you as well, and thank you for listening.
All right. Bye now. There you go, folks. Steve McLaughlin running for Public Lands Commissioner in Washington. that is a God-fearing patriot and a rare commodity. So get behind him. I also want to remind you that the back end of this show was sponsored by Works Holsters, W-E-R-K-Z, Works Holsters. That's works.com. They make custom Kydex holsters with a lifetime guarantee, and they're made right here in the American Redoubt. Check them out at works.com. I am working with some legislators, and we are going to be pursuing this not just because of the homosexual colors, the stolen rainbow, I should say, the perverted rainbow, which they've adorned the Idaho State Capitol with. But this is just symptomatic of a bigger problem that we are going to be addressing and getting you engaged. So for right now, your marching orders are to get a hold of your elected officials over there in Idaho and scream at your legislators to change the rules that have the same weight as law, but that are not passed by lawmakers. They're passed by lobbyists. And we're gonna completely expose this, and it can be stopped. Unfortunately, it's a game of catch-up. The legislators are always running behind these rules committees who make rules that have the full weight as if they were law. And they dump 1,500 pages of rules on the legislature right when they begin session. There's no way possibly you can read it all. And so they just say, okay, we trust you. You passed these rules because it was necessary to make this office over here go and to facilitate this regulation. Okay, we get it. All right, stamp. Boom, a passed, right? And then they realize there's stuff in there that are contradictory to our values, to our laws, to who we are as a people. And then they got to run and chase behind it, passing laws, eliminating parts of those rules. We're going to overcome that. This is John Jacob Schmidt. Join us tomorrow night for our weekly podcast at 8 p.m. RadioFreeRedoubt.com. Happy Father's Day, all.